Finally, at this stage in my life, I'm learning that Christians should take trouble for granted. A British journalist, Malcolm Muggeridge, who, by the way, became a Christian before his death, said the following late in life. Here's what he said. Contrary to what might be expected, I look back on experiences that at the time seemed especially desolating and painful with particular satisfaction. Indeed, everything I have learned, everything that has truly enhanced and enlightened my existence, has been through affliction and not through happiness. Now, every thoughtful person has wondered why God sends trials to his children. And you don't have to live long before that question stares you in the face. Well, it might be a critical illness or the death of a loved one, the loss of a job, the breakup of a marriage, trouble with your children, a season of depression, financial difficulties, or a time of intense persecution from others because of your faith. Those things happen to all of us sooner or later. And if you've never considered why God allows things to enter the lives of his children, you ought to. Christians should take trouble for granted. When you turn to the Bible, you find many perspectives to help you understand why trials come to God's children. And in our text before us, in verses 6 and 7 of 1 Peter chapter 1, we have here an important perspective that we need to know. It doesn't answer every question you could ask about trials, trouble, and the sufferings of this life. No single text could do that. But it does provide a crucial framework for seeing the hand of God at work in the worst moments of life. Take a look at verse 6. Wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. Now, right off the bat, I want you to notice two key words. The first is trials or temptations at the end of verse 6. Now, depending on the context, it can have a positive or a negative connotation. For instance, when you face a test in school, you either pass or fail. The same is true of the tests in life. God sends those tests so that what is in the heart will be revealed for all to see. The same event may be both a test and a temptation. That is, it may be sent by God to test you, or Satan may use it as an occasion for temptation. And it all depends on how you respond. Well, when trouble comes, you may turn to God in prayer, or you may become bitter. When trouble comes, you may become quiet and thoughtful, or you might begin to complain. You may become tender and compassionate, or you may become harsh and cruel. You may learn new trust in God, or you may rebel against him. You may take courage, or you may give in to fear. You may draw close to God, or you may turn away from him. It's the same event in all cases, but with vastly different results, and it depends on how you respond. So the first word is temptations or trials. Take a look at the second word, and it's the word, also in verse 6, from the phrase, in this you greatly rejoice. Take the root word of rejoice, that is joy, and consider it for a moment. What is joy? Well, it's a difficult word to define. I mean, we know that joy and happiness are two different things. Happiness depends upon circumstances and comes and goes according to the emotions of the moment. But joy is deeper and more profound because it comes from God. Joy comes from genuine satisfaction with God. When you are satisfied with God, you will have joy even in the hardest moments of life. And joy is always at the center for the Christian. Trials are at the periphery. Joy is the ability to face reality, the good and the bad, the happy and the sad, the positive and the negative, the best and the worst. Why? Because you are satisfied with God. Seen in that light, there is no contradiction between joy and trials. They belong together. Listen, Christians should take trouble for granted. In 1 Peter chapter 1, we are taught four important truths about the trials of life. First of all, Peter teaches us that your trials are brief. Peter begins by assuring his readers that their trials would only last for a little while. Well, of course, that little while seems to last forever when you're in the furnace. We all understand that. When you sit by the bedside of a loved one in the hospital, time seems to slow to a crawl. When your marriage crumbles, or your children are in trouble, or you lose your job and can't pay your bills, the trial seems to go on forever. In what sense can Peter say that our trials are brief? Well, the answer is, everything in this life is brief when compared to eternity. It's all a matter of perspective. If I say I know a man who can hold his breath for a long time, I'm referring to the fact that he can hold his breath for 2 or 3 minutes. Well, 2 or 3 minutes is a long time for breath holding. But if I say that Julie and I have been married for a long time, I'm referring to the fact that we've been together for more than 28 years. And that's indeed a long time for a marriage to last in our day. It's all a matter of perspective. I had the opportunity to be in China in April this year, representing our South African churches and teaching 20 of the sweetest Chinese pastors you'll ever meet on the face of the earth. I taught them the principles of biblical interpretation over a 9-day period just outside of the city of Shanghai. I was sick the entire time. I felt miserable. Felt really sorry for myself. But the amazing thing is that I spent time with 20 men who I very quickly discovered didn't complain about anything. Ever. Seriously. After a few days, I thought, man, have I landed in the twilight zone here? Could this possibly be true? And every test I applied to my theory over the next 8 or 9 days, I was astounded that it is absolutely true. These men have paid such a price for serving God. They've learned to find themselves in Him. I guess that's kind of a perspective. Lord, you're in control of all of this. We just want to be found faithful. You see, our trials may last for weeks or months or years, and sometimes they last for decades. But seen against the endless ages of eternity, even the worst trials here are brief by comparison. Our problem, I suppose, is a kind of a spiritual nearsightedness that views this world somehow as the real world and counts eternity as nothing by comparison because we can't feel and touch it. God never asks us to deny the harsh reality of our trials. He doesn't expect us to deny this reality and ignore the pain. He only asks that we maintain His perspective on our suffering. When you are young, death seems rather theoretical. And even when it happens to others around you, it seems remote from your own experience. But as some of you grayheads out there will agree with me, that time has a way of changing things, changing your thinking, changing your perspective. Now, I often think about all of these young children that we minister to in the townships around Knysna who are infected with the HIV virus. At the very best, their lives might be prolonged by the administration of antiretroviral drugs and by giving them a good, nutritious diet. But the reality is that in many of those lives, the dreaded AIDS thing will kick in to destroy their chances. And every time I'm around these children, I wonder how much time we will have to win them to Christ. And how will we minister to them if they become critically ill? How will we prepare them and their families to face the ultimate trial of their lives? How will we prepare them for a possible premature death? Very hard to think about, but a reality nonetheless. See, life is short for all of us compared to eternity. Yet, in the worst of your trials, you can rejoice because you know that they will not, they cannot last forever. So Peter reminds us in this text this evening that our trials are brief. Second thing he points out is that your trials are necessary. Notice how he puts it. If necessary for a little while. You know, Peter could not be sure how long they would suffer, but he knows that the suffering itself is necessary. Whether long or short, hard times come to every believer. And those hard times come in many varieties. They come over and over again. No Christian is exempt from trials. Some have more, others have less, but we all share in the many trials Peter mentions. Julie and I have come through a very difficult year with a stomach bacteria that attacked Julie very severely this year. And in fact, if the bacteria wasn't attempting to kill her, the cure almost did. And she is still in a mode of recovery right now after months of being incapacitated. And we felt pretty sorry for ourselves during that time. Well, I'm speaking for myself. Maybe she didn't. As we tried to minister to her needs and get her through a very dark period of poor health. But you know what? Every time we get in a conversation with somebody and hear their story, hear their tale, we discover that everyone around us is enduring or has endured countless trials themselves. And many of those people are in ministry full time. See, trials are necessary to mold us and to make us and to help us grow spiritually. That's why Martin Luther called adversity the very best book in my library. And George Whitefield declared that God puts burrs in our bed to keep us watchful and awake. Perhaps that's why you couldn't sleep last night. Those trials are proof that you belong to the Lord. Peter says your trials are brief and they're necessary, but he goes on to say that your trials are purifying. And here we have arrived at the heart of Peter's message. Trials come so that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, might be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. I want you to notice the little word "that" in your text. Circle it, underline it, highlight it. No word is more hopeful or more needed. The word "that" tells you that your trials have a purpose. They don't just happen by chance or by some random act of fate. There are no accidents for the children of God. Everything happens for a reason. Now listen to me. Even though you may not see the reason, your faith can survive if you know that a reason actually does exist. And Peter goes on to explain that God sends trials in order to test and purify your faith. The phrase "genuineness of your faith," or literally a faith that is proved genuine, translates the word "dokimos," which means to test something in order to prove that it will not fail. It's like this. When GM tests Ford vehicles, they do it to prove that Ford vehicles won't pass the test. But when GM tests their own vehicles, they do it to prove that theirs will pass the same test. That's the word used here. God puts your faith to the test by allowing hard times to come, not to destroy you, not to discourage you, but to demonstrate that your faith is genuine. Notice the contrast that he develops there between faith and pure gold. Now, many of you would know that South Africa is one of the leading gold producers in the world. Did you know that it takes 4 tons of gold ore just to produce 1 ounce of pure gold? During the refining process, the ore is put into a giant furnace and heated until it liquefies. Then the dross or the slag is skimmed off, leaving only the pure gold at the bottom. In ancient times, goldsmiths knew that they had pure gold when they could look at the gold and see their reflection. And that's what God intends through your trials. He puts you in the furnace to burn off the greed, the impatience, the hatred, the unkindness, the anger, the bitterness, the lust, and the selfishness. And for most of us, That's a lifetime process. But in the end, the image of Jesus is formed and reflected in us. And I've seen that happen over and over again in the lives of suffering saints, and so have you. Look, God wants to prove that your faith is genuine. And trials provide the most reliable proof. Like, you might be able to mouth certain phrases that make you sound spiritual when things are going well. But how you respond when life tumbles in around you tells the real story of what you truly believe. God proves your faith to you, to your loved ones, and to a watching world. And the contrast between the trial and the gold shows up in the reality that the trial of your faith is much more precious than gold that perishes. Well, outside the four walls of your church are tens of thousands of people who watch the way you live. They may not understand what you believe, but they watch you from a distance to see how you respond when hard times come. And even if they don't understand it all, they are profoundly moved by a Christian whose faith remains strong in the time of trouble. By that, they will know your faith is real, and that draws them one step closer to Jesus. And this is how it works. You lost your money, but gained devoted faith. You lost your health, but gained patient faith. You lost your job, but gained dependent faith. You lost your loved ones, but gained grieving faith. You lost your friends, but gained courageous faith. And that's how God brings triumph out of your trials. And from the pit of despair, he lifts you to the pinnacle of faith, because hard times make strong saints. There's no other way. Peter says your trials are brief, they're necessary, they're purifying, but there's one final truth that our text suggests about your trials. Your trials are eternally significant. God sends trials to prove your faith is genuine, so it may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Now, normally when we read words like praise, glory, and honor, we associate them with our Savior himself. But Jesus says, we are the ones who gain praise, honor, and glory. That is, the Lord bestows upon you praise, honor, and glory. Or more properly, because of your faithfulness during your trials in this life, you will share in the praise, glory, and honor that belongs to your Lord. What a thought that is. Isn't it amazing? We don't deserve praise, glory, and honor. What an incredible scene in heaven that will be when the faithful saints of God are crowned with glory, praise, and honor by the Lord himself. Now, I imagine Jesus saying, Father, this is, well, put your name in the blank. He suffered for my sake on the earth, and he never denied my name. He is one of my faithful ones. And as those words are spoken, a vast cheer rolls across the universe from the assembled multitudes. And so it will go as one by one, those who suffered much in this life, those who endured ridicule, hatred, and martyrdom are revealed and rewarded for their faithfulness. And those who suffered illness with joy, those who lost their possessions but not their faith, those who walked a hard road on the earth but never gave up, are recognized and honored by the Lord. When Jesus finally appears, my fellow believer, you will find out what your trials have accomplished. Things that seemed useless and unfair will be seen as they truly are, instruments of God's grace. Things you thought were hard and even cruel, you will discover were tempered by God's mercy. And we will all say, he was nearest when I thought him farthest away. He was faithful when I had no faith to believe. He used my trials to develop my faith, and he used my faith to encourage others. We don't see things very clearly now, but in that day, all will be made plain. As we look back across the pathway of life, we will see that nothing was wasted. God knew what he was doing all along. Well, let me offer three final thoughts before we conclude this evening. First of all, let me remind you, trouble is something we should all take for granted. After what your Lord endured 2,000 years ago, how can you ever say, "I can't believe this is happening to me"? Better to face the trials of life with wide-eyed realism, understanding that suffering is the first course of God's curriculum in the school of spiritual growth. Second observation, trouble is meant to draw us closer to the Lord, not push us further away. Strange as it may seem, your troubles are a sign of God's love. For if he did not love you, he would not discipline you. See Hebrews chapter 12 if you don't understand that idea. Some of you may say, "Well, if that's the case, God must love me a whole lot." Well, I'm certain he does. And your trials and your tears and the confusion you experience do not invalidate his love for you. C.S. Lewis remarked that God whispers to us in our pleasure, but shouts to us in our pain. He called pain God's megaphone to rouse a sleeping world. And many times God speaks to you through your pain because you won't listen to him any other way. Well, a third observation here tonight. Trouble is meant to be used and not wasted. Isn't that what James was referring to in chapter 1, verses 2 through 4? Brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing this, that the trial of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Your hard times are not easy, and sometimes they're just not good at all. I understand that. But God can use them for your good and for his glory. He intends to prove your faith genuine by the way you respond to your trials. Think of it this way. Before your trials, your faith is unproved. After your trials, your faith is improved. A faith God approves brings him great glory. And that's good news for all of us. Listen to this. God is not looking for educated people. He's not looking for rich people. He's not looking for talented people. And I think you'll all agree, he's not looking for beautiful people. God is looking for faithful disciples who, having passed through the fiery trials, are stamped with the hallmark for all the world to see, approved by God. As I speak these words, I am certain that some of you are going through incredibly difficult things at this very moment. What is God saying to you? First of all, it won't last forever. Secondly, it is necessary for your spiritual growth. And thirdly, it's sent to help you, not to hurt you. And if you find yourself in the furnace right now, be of good cheer. It is your Father's kindness that has put you there. Nothing of value will be taken from you while you are in the furnace. The only things taken from you will be those things you didn't need anyway. And so I come back to the two words I mentioned at the beginning. Joy and trials. Now we can see clearly how these two always work together. You know, we don't believe that it's joy then trials, or trials then joy, or even joy or trials. It is always joy and trials, both at the same time, working together, mixed together, so that you have joy in your trials, joy beside your trials, joy within your trials, and sometimes even joy in spite of your trials. This is why David could say in Psalm 34 and verse 8, after mentioning his fears and his troubles, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." But most of you will only discover that truth in the furnace. Like the three Hebrew children of Daniel 3, when you are cast into the furnace, suddenly you'll discover the fourth man is there with you. Jesus comes to you in your time of direst need, and just when you need him the most, he is there. So this is my word to you. Christian, you should take trouble for granted. And in the midst of the trial, this is what you must say. Whatever it takes, Lord, do your work in me. Whatever it takes to purify my heart, do your work in me. Whatever it takes to build my faith, do your work in me. Whatever it takes to make me like Jesus, do your work in me. And if that means doing some furnace time, okay, Lord, do your work in me. If that means fiery trials today and more tomorrow, all right, do your work in me. Lord, I want my life to be approved by you. So, do your work in me. This is God's call to you, Christian. Embrace God, embrace the cross that God is calling you to bear. Take your trouble for granted. Stop fighting with God. Stop complaining. Remember those Chinese pastors? Stop blaming others. And then open your heart for exceeding joy. Some of you have never discovered this kind of joy because you tend to fight God at the point of your trials. But joy and trials come together in God's plan. There is no exceeding great joy without the suffering that goes with it. Don't miss great rejoicing because you are reacting against the great trials in your life. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. Do not resist his work in your life, and he will lift you up. Let God do his work in you, and you will know joy unspeakable and full of glory. May the Lord bless you.